Circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
Most peculiar, Mama. Roll.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Hello again, and welcome to yet another intriguing edition of the program, which is number 463 in the current series. This mouth continues to not get words sounding quite the way they need to sound, but rumor has it that before the next edition of this program, major steps will be taken to fix it. So thank you for your understanding and for continuing to grab the files and make yourself aware of the strangeness that goes on both on and off this planet. This time, commentator and editorialist Dave Furlott, our British correspondent and publisher of Alien Worlds magazine, Stuart Miller, and UFO researcher and author of a fascinating book, UFOs and Nukes, Extraordinary Encounters at Nuclear Weapons Sites, Robert Hastings.
These are Strange Days Indeed on UFO News Radio. Here with his take on it is Dave Furlott.
There's a thread on the UFO updates list entitled Blanchard, Little, and Roswell. And the thread has been ongoing for a very long while now. It was begun by Kevin Randall, a gentleman that I highly respect, and the thread is basically a repost of his blog and addresses some things mentioned in Robert Hastings' book, UFOs and Nukes, Extraordinary Encounters at Nuclear Weapons Sites. The information that comes into question is what information was discussed between Robert Little and General Blanchard aboard an aircraft bound for Illinois. Little received some information from the man about events that took place in July of 1947 in Roswell, New Mexico. And according to the author of the book, Little told him in an interview that General Blanchard said that an alien spacecraft and four bodies were recovered from the New Mexico desert in July of 1947. Now, that would be earth-shaking news, provided any of it could be verified and confirmed. However, seeing as how General Blanchard and Mr. Little are both dead, it is impossible to confirm the conversation. And it has generated a lot of discussion on the UFO updates list. The concerning part about all of this is that the discussion centers around who got what files and from where and when concerning Major Jesse Marcel and Dr. Jesse Marcel, Jr. It also calls into question whether people can be believed or not regarding some of the things being claimed. For example, someone actually lays claim that they got medical records in addition to military records about individuals. And the problem with that is that medical records are treated like state secrets, and rightly so. So someone claiming that they were given the medical records of an individual, well, that's highly unlikely at best and an outright lie at worst. The problem with all of this is that it's degenerated into a situation where quite possibly some very valid information comes to light, but with all of the mud being thrown at it, it obscures the overall picture. You see, Roswell is one of those UFO legends that has divided camps. And, well, I'll tell you what. Let me summarize briefly some of the various things being said with Roswell. We can't really even decide how many crash sites there were. We have zero, we have one, we have two, and even three potential places where something actually came down in the New Mexico desert and was recovered by the U.S. Army Air Force in July of 47. And the object itself, well, it's either a weather balloon, a mogul balloon array, or an alien spaceship. Oh, wait a sec. I almost forgot. We also have a potential Fugo balloon from an experiment with Project Paperclip. The body is recovered, vary from 3 to 4 to 6. And we have either 2 or 1 survivor of the crash. And we also have the bodies and survivors being either extraterrestrial creatures or Japanese prisoners of war or scientists that were detained from World War II. It's all very confusing because you get some very credible ufologists supporting all different versions of the Roswell legend based on interviews and opinion and some very hard research into the entire Roswell incident. Now, I personally believe that there was an alien craft that crashed in the New Mexico desert. And it did get recovered by the U.S. military personnel that were stationed at the Roswell Army Air Force Base. The reason I believe that is because of some of the very simple facts that have never been called into question because they happened and nobody has ever denied that they did. Number one, Colonel Blanchard had Walter Haut issue a press release stating that the U.S. Army Air Force recovered a crashed flying saucer. And unless somebody can prove to me that the late General Blanchard was either a crackpot or had a twisted sense of humor, there must have been a reason for him to give such an order. Number two, Major Jesse Marcel recovered debris from a crashed alien spacecraft and brought it home and showed it to his 8-year-old son, who was suitably impressed and surprised at what he saw. For this not to be a fact would require that we believe that an officer with the rank of major and responsible for military intelligence operations on the base is not capable of telling the difference between metal or neoprene and rubber, and additionally doesn't know the difference between balsa wood and metal. Either that, or obviously Major Jesse Marcel was also a crackpot or also had a twisted sense of humor. And number three, the U.S. Army Air Force and their later form, being that of the U.S. Air Force, have admitted that they lied about what was found in the desert in July of 1947, because a weather balloon quickly becomes a mogul balloon. Which means that the debris that Major Jesse Marcel posed with for pictures in the office was not actual debris from the crash site. Well, you know, no matter how you cut it, some of those facts are never going to change. And that means that, as I said, I stand by. I believe that an alien spaceship crashed in New Mexico in July of 1947. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Fermont, every week at this time. Strange days, indeed.
Oh, Dave Fermont, the believer.
When it comes to that particular situation, most definitely. The facts are there, and they're not in dispute. What comes into dispute is every time something new comes out, somebody tries to throw things at it that are completely irrelevant to what's being discussed, the point in fact. And in this situation, instead of concentrating on the actual reported conversation, what they decide to get into is records and who has gotten what from where and when. Does it really matter that somebody supposedly has the military records of Major Jesse Marcel, and this person has it, the other person couldn't get it? Come on. What is this, high school? Hey, I got this. You couldn't. Ha ha. There was a post today on the list. We're talking almost a month now. Let us focus simply on what is 100% valid fact. And if we focus just on that, that gets us a lot closer to the answer of what really happened there. Nothing else. That will get us there. I don't care if you believe or if you don't believe or if you are 100% a skeptomonger, you cannot dispute that fact.
I think the expression is flogging a deceased equine.
Yes, flogging a deceased equine is a good way to put it.
Talking about flogging dead horses, did you happen to catch the ABC primetime?
Of course.
They had footage from the original shoot for the Jennings special, which they used quite liberally all the way through. I think the tone was set for me right off the top when they were with Art Bell in his home studio in Pahrump, Nevada.
Yes.
He said, well, all somebody's got to do is see a flying saucer or a UFO, and they immediately become a ufologist.
Oh, Lord. That says it all in a nutshell.
Unfortunately, it was more of the same old, same old.
Yeah. It's like I said in one of my takes a long time ago. I don't mind if a blind man is standing in front of a tree and he can't see it. It's physically impossible for him to see it. But when somebody stands in front of that same tree with their eyes closed, complaining that they cannot see the tree, it's like, open your eyes.
Can't see the wood for the trees. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know, why bother?
But we also have the situation, too, and we have to recognize the fact that, again, it's become quite evident that our illustrious governments are protecting us, shall we say. And as a result of that protection, sometimes some of those people get involved within our community, and they do tend to toss some stuff around to try and confuse us.
Makes you wonder where they're coming from.
It gets quite crazy and quite frustrating.
Tell me about it. As the moderator, I see the same old stuff coming up, and how many times can you say before posting to the list about something, go read the archive?
I understand, but you got to also understand, too, that we're getting new people probably every day that are just discovering this whole phenomena.
All the more reason to go read the archive.
Oh, yeah, agreed. But they won't. They get excited. So once they're getting excited, it becomes a situation of, oh, geez, has anybody heard about this thing that crashed in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947? I just got a little bit about that. God, you got to look at this.
Yeah, in the 14 years of UFO updates, hasn't occurred to anyone to discuss it.
No, not at all.
And it couldn't possibly be in the UFO Updates archive.
No.
Yeah.
or the other one is, oh, expert, did you guys?
Yeah, and so it goes. Dave Furlot, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you real soon.
For sure.
Bye, Dave.
Bye-bye.
I love the odd-numbered programs of Strange Days Indeed, because that's when we head across the pond and talk with our British contributing editor, publisher, chief scribe of Alien Worlds magazine. We head across the pond. Stuart Miller joins us. Hello, Stuart.
Hello, Errol. Hello, everybody.
Alien Worlds magazine issue number 4.
Yes.
Very tasty, Stuart. You get better and better.
You're very kind, thank you. Anything in particular or just the general?
The whole general feel of it. I'm pleased to see that you are consistently going both sides of the fence.
Yes, I am. Although not too far on both sides of the fence. I give a balanced perspective, and I don't think I cater for one camp exclusively.
I did say both sides of the fence rather than on the fence.
Yes, indeed. I'm just thinking about how far I go in terms of the, in inverted commas, believers side of things. Let's put it this way. On both sides of the fence, actually, there is certainly an element of editing and there is a line I'm not prepared to cross or feel uncomfortable crossing. Having said that, I'm just thinking that if I had somebody who was a debunker as opposed to a skeptic, I actually don't think I would object to reflecting his views. Having said that, within a context, I'm just wondering if I would actually feature an interview with somebody from ExoPolitics. I don't know if I'd be prepared to go in that direction. I might be. I wouldn't rule it out. I think I'd be more inclined to go with a debunker, not because I'd want to present his views particularly as such, but I think I would just be happier getting into the mindset of somebody who thinks along those lines than perhaps with somebody who is an out-and-out believer without any reservations, so to speak, and who is into the heavy conspiratorial side of things. Inevitably, if you're interested in UFOs, there is a conspiratorial element. I acknowledge that. But I think some people take it to a point that, I suppose, anybody's opinions really are of interest as long as they are. I'm able to frame them, I think, in an appropriate manner. I think that's really the proviso I would add.
Mm.
There is an enormous amount of plain dishonesty, I think, in ufology these days that passes for, and I'm not thinking of ExoPolitics, who actually, I believe, are actually fundamentally quite an honest bunch of people, just
misguided.
Well, I think Paul Kimball made a very interesting observation in his piece on issue 4 of Alien Worlds when he suggested that there is a very thin line between ExoPolitics and Stan Friedman's philosophy, and I think that's perhaps a bit harsh, but there were one or two very uncomfortable statements that Paul made, which I found rang true, actually, and I do really wonder just how far out on a limb ExoPolitics are from the mainstream of ufology. And in some ways, they are more honest in that they make no bones about it. It's just, this is what we believe. And really, a lot of people disguise a pseudoscientific approach to ufology with really, they really use that as a cover for the fact that they are essentially believers. Now, I don't criticize that because I think I am as well. But there's definitely a change in me, and I guess it is a pull towards the skeptical side a bit more.
That's probably healthier, not just for you, but for a lot of people.
I'll give you an example. It's something that's actually come up today, and it's an article on UFO Digest by a gentleman called Andrew Russell. It's an article entitled Confusion and Contradictions about the Cardiff UFO sightings with police helicopter. This case still rumbles on. And he's saying that the police and the Ministry of Defence are all changing their story. For listeners who don't recall the story, some months ago, a police helicopter in Cardiff, or over Cardiff in South Wales, reported chasing a UFO. And they made this claim, they actually used the word UFO. And, of course, the story had added significance because it was two policemen, and the police are considered to be, quote, trained observers, end quote, and they will have seen most things sat up there in that helicopter. So the fact that it was policemen involved obviously carried extra weight. Some 5 days or so after the event, a rather embarrassed couple revealed that they thought that they were responsible for this sighting and that they had released a Chinese lantern for some reason. There was some weight attached to their testimony as well, because firstly, they were a professional couple, as I recall, and that seemed to carry some weight. And the timings and their report of the direction in which they saw their lantern take off seemed, as I recall, to match the positioning of the police helicopter and where they'd reported seeing this object. And at that point, the story died, and there was an embarrassed sort of silence from the Cardiff police. Followed up a few days later, I think I've mentioned this on Strange Days before, of an emergency, a 999, that's what we dial in this country for the emergency services, a 999 call to an operator, reputedly of somebody claiming to have seen a big UFO in the sky, only for the operator to put it out to the nearest patrolling police car, who responded that yes, there was something big up in the sky, and it was the moon. In other words, the caller was made to look very stupid, unidentified the caller, by the way, I think it was a man, and it made ufology or people interested in UFOs look rather silly. It was a remarkable coincidence that this tape was released to the public some days after two policemen in a helicopter over Wales claimed to have seen a UFO. Do you remember me mentioning that?
Yes, I do.
And I thought it was a rather nasty, malicious thing for the police to do, because clearly what had happened was they had accepted the story of this couple on the ground as being the most likely explanation for what they'd observed, felt very stupid themselves, and decided to hit back. Now, Andrew Russell, who's written this article for UFO Digest, covers just about every point in the case that's come up, including the possibility of a Chinese or a wedding lantern. Doesn't mention, though, this couple. His only reference to wedding lanterns is, and he's ably aided and abetted here, apparently by Philip Mantle, is the statement that the crew are experienced and would recognize a Chinese wedding lantern if they saw one. And that's that as regards that part of it, and the rest of it is a hodgepodge of conspiracy, even down to the fact that UFO hunters came over to the UK to film an interview with him, and they were stood outside an RAF base to do an interview in relation to this case. And basically, it was very quiet. When they got there, they started filming. Some officers or some RAF personnel came out to see what they were doing. They showed them the permits they had that entitled them to film, and they were accepted, and they went off. And then a few minutes later, suddenly the RAF base was a cacophony of noise, including one person driving a forklift truck up to the perimeter fence where they were filming and climbing off and just leaving the engine running. In other words, interfering with their filming. Well, of course, this is conspiratorial as well, and obviously means that the RAF are trying to cover something up. Possibly the fact that the UFO was over. In other words, I'm criticizing this article, I'm criticizing the philosophy perpetrated in it, and I'm saying that in many ways, it's typical of the sort of dishonesty that you can find in the world of UFOs.
Do we know, in fact, that that interference with their shooting at the RAF base did occur?
Well, he says it did, and I've no particular reason to disbelieve him. It's probably just the RAF not wanting a bunch of people nosing about outside their... what does it say? What does it say if that happened? And I don't doubt that it did. Oh, there it is. It's got the name now. RAF St. Athan. I've never heard of it before. But, and no doubt, you'll probably see that on the appropriate edition of UFO Hunters whenever it's transmitted. But what does it tell us? It certainly doesn't tell us that an extraterrestrial craft was flying over Cardiff in South Wales. It doesn't confirm that fact. The best it can tell us is that, as I said a few moments ago, the RAF don't really care for people nosing around outside their perimeter fence. The fact that he's having trouble or seemingly picking up contradictions in what the MOD are telling him, what the South Wales police are telling him, really doesn't say anything there either. So it doesn't give us what we would all like it to be, and it doesn't even get remotely close to it. And particularly when he, well, I presume deliberately ignores, seems to be able to cover every fact in the story bar one, the one where this couple stepped forward, and the one which would seemingly offer the most reasonable explanation for what happened. But then, you know, it gets about all sorts of other areas here as well. If that's all it was, a Chinese wedding lantern, and if two supposedly expert witnesses misidentified this, then what does it say about expert witnesses? Does that mean that all other UFO sightings where the witnesses have been supposedly trained personnel are now suspect because of this? So it's an uncomfortable fact, so we don't go there.
Have you yourself seen Chinese wedding lanterns either in the sky or on sale on the ground?
I've got, I think, 10 of them sat in this room where I'm talking to you now. I bought them I bought them a while ago with the intention of letting them off just a laugh. I have just been too lazy and idle to get round to it.
What size are these things, Stuart?
They can be quite large. I would think, I've not actually unwrapped them, but I think that when I unwrap them, mine are probably going to be something like about 4 or 5 feet in length.
Are they rectangular?
No, they're circular, made of thin paper in a very thin frame, I think it is. I think it's wood.
Balsa wood?
Probably. And you set them off by, I think there are two means of propulsion. One is where you've got effectively what is a candle, I think. It's a wick with wax on it, which nestles underneath, and you light that, and obviously the hot air from that lifts the thing up. And it tends to burn for maybe 15 minutes, something like that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't there some infrared footage of
the object that the Cardiff police saw from their helicopter?
I don't remember that.
It seems to me that there was, and this object was rectangular. You could almost describe it like a box kite.
Well, firstly, it's possible that some Chinese lanterns come in that shape. The ones I've tended to see have been circular. We can get into a whole science here of light refraction and reflection and how images can appear in one shape or form. Regardless of which way you look at this, I just have no confidence in the fact that this is anything even remotely, genuinely anomalous. And I think there is a large dollop of embarrassment on the part of South Wales Police. And I think that probably the other authorities involved, well, the MOD have tended to distance themselves from it. I think the police would rather the whole thing went away. But it is interesting in as much as it does bring into question the weight that we bring to the testimony of expert witnesses. Having myself talked to a number of pilots and indeed police officers over the years, I mean, the one thing that you do realize very quickly is that you're just talking to ordinary human beings who do not have particularly enhanced powers of observation beyond that that you can find amongst the general public.
Too much credence is given to those types of witnesses.
Absolutely.
They're not trained observers.
Well, I would think the police are probably given some, certainly in the UK and I'm sure elsewhere as well, are probably given some instruction in observing scenes and how to note details down, but in the end, that person will only be as good as their intellect and their capability allows. And you are going to get some people that are going to be very good at it, and you're going to get a lot of people that aren't. I really don't think there's anything particularly that marks them out from the general public at large.
Well, it's rather like the voice at the beginning of this program who says, oh my God, what's that? Oh, please let it be a plane.
Yes.
He didn't recognize it as a plane straight away.
Yes, that's a very interesting area for me as well, because I live very close to Manchester Airport. My living accommodation is upside down, quite deliberately. In other words, our bedrooms are downstairs, and our living accommodation is upstairs. And one of the reasons for that is that we are halfway up a hill, and it's a fairly nice view. So the guy that built the house did it deliberately, and we eat upstairs, and we've sort of got a, I wouldn't call it a panoramic view over a valley, but I can see a bit. And I'm next to one of the flight paths into Manchester Airport. Now, particularly at night in the dark, it's very interesting to watch these lights come in and how they change when the plane changes its angle of approach and how the light can at one point be extremely dim. You can see something moving there, but it's not exactly a bright light. And then suddenly you've got these massive lights coming at you for a period of time and then they turn away again. It's fascinating to watch. And you can't see any flashing lights. In other words, the undercarriage lights. You can just see either white lights or sort of an amber sort of light.
I guess the white or amber light tends to blot out the wingtip lights and the tail fin light, which would be red and green and whatever is on the back end.
Yeah, I don't tend to see those. I went away for a week on holiday to British France. Come back and find there's a full debate ongoing about Roswell, which came on UFO updates. No surprise.
As Lemberg said yesterday, it seems like every 5 years we get a resurgence of Roswell.
Well, there's two reactions here. On the one hand, it's, I suppose, a little bit despairing. But on the other hand, it's perfectly understandable because it's fascinating. It is fascinating in the sense that this major event occurred. 50 years, more than 50 years later, we still don't really know what happened. But the reason I bring this up is because I interviewed Kevin Randall just before I went away on holiday. A very interesting man he is.
Yeah.
Very nice man. What a genuinely honest and intelligent individual he is. It was a very broad-ranging conversation, but one of the topics we discussed, and I can't say I agree with everything he thinks, not just about Roswell, but about UFOs in general. One part of the conversation turned to the cover-up and the really original question about why the cover-up. Because as he himself said in his answer, now in 2008, he is looking at a very different society to the one that existed in 1947. We are now regularly, actively talking about the prospect of extraterrestrial life. Most people would not be shocked if some discovery was made, providing it was a distant discovery, I think would be fair to say. A good example of what I've just said there would be, for example, if a telescope was constructed which was powerful enough to detect the existence of industrial activity in the atmosphere of an extrasolar planet. So, for example, an announcement was made that such and such a planet, which is 30 light years away, there is evidence to us that in the atmosphere of that planet, there is some sort of industrial activity going on the surface of that planet. Now, that would be incredibly exciting. I think most people would be incredibly interested as well, deeply interested, but I hardly think that would be something that would send people into a panic. So, if that's where we are philosophically with this, and maybe even an incident a bit closer to home, so to speak, which we could sort of take in our stride. If that's where we are with this, then if Roswell was an extraterrestrial event, well, why keep it secret?
And what conclusion? Oh, we have to subscribe and...